After resting for the day, Preacher returned and worked his way closer to the barricaded camp as the night fell softly all around him. He stopped his stealthy advance at the far side of the creek bank. He strung his bow and selected an arrow from the quiver while watching the stockade. Those inside had lit candles or lamps. They had a couple of fires going.
Holy shit. Talk about stupid. Gun slits lit up like a goddamn chandelier.
Every so often, the shape of a head would appear briefly, then pull back. Preacher calculated the distance. Easy shot. He waited with the patience of a stalking puma. One of Bone's men walked to a slit and peered out. Everyone inside the wall heard the wet smack and turned. The man stood on his boots for a few seconds, the shaft of the arrow protruding from his forehead. Then he toppled over and fell on his back.
Douse them candles and lamps. Put out them fires.
Drag that body out of here and heave it over the wall.
Dios mío.
The next arrow just missed Spanish, who flattened out on the ground.
Good God. Don't fire up no matches.
Sir Elmore grinned excitedly at Juan Zapata, the Prince of Spain.
Isn't this exciting?
See, I cannot wait until the morning. The mountain man is indeed a worthwhile adversary.
Preacher had worked closer, passing through the horses in a crude corral. He calmed them with touches and made his way to the log walls of the stockade. Bones had placed no guards outside the stockade.
No guards? Not very smart, boys.
Suddenly, Preacher stopped cold.
Oh, no way. No goddamn way. Bones wouldn't put no guards outside this thing, and he wouldn't leave the horses unguarded. He ain't that stupid.
Only Preacher's eyes shifted, searching the darkness. When his eyes touched a shape, he almost jumped out of his moccasins. The man was no more than 10 feet away. Preacher could make out the shape of the man's head and the long barrel of his rifle. Fortunately for Preacher, the guard had his back to him. The night had turned cloudy, and there'd be no moon. If the dark building clouds held true, in very few minutes this night was going to produce a rain that would be a real toad strangler. Preacher slowly eased out his razor-sharp, long-bladed knife and held it close to one leg, so no stray glimmer or light would reflect off the blade. Preacher lowered the body to the ground. He began working his way around to the other side of the stockade, moving very slowly. Bones had used a length of chain to fasten the crude corral gate. Preacher had to nix the plan to set the steeds loose. Just then, one of Bones' men poked his face out of a gun slit. Preacher yanked out a pistol. Preacher jammed the muzzles of both of those terrible pistols into a gun slit. Then Preacher was gone, running through the night. The men rushed outside of the stockade, but the darkness of the night and the now heavy driving rain blinded them to Preacher's escape.
I'm Preacher! Digits call me Ghost Walker, White Wolf, man who kills silently. None of you are ever going to leave these mountains. You will all die. I'm giving you all the chances you're ever going to get. So make your peace with God. Some of you are going to die tomorrow.
I was under the impression the man was a near cretin, illiterate. That was a very eloquent little speech. Now, how does he propose to carry out that rather ominous threat?
Preacher means what he says. We must all leave these mountains at first light and do not look back.
You're Yeller. I knowed you was Yeller all the time.
Darkhand didn't reply. He had made up his mind. The next morning, Preacher saw Darkhand coming from a long way off. He got out his spyglass and scanned the country behind the Pawnee. No one else in sight. Then he noticed that Darkhand was riding with his rifle in a boot and his pistols nowhere in sight. His bow was in his quiver and not strung. He was riding with his big knife sheathed and hung by a cord around his neck.
He wants to palaver. That's mighty damn odd.
Preacher stepped out from his camp into a clearing on the slope and waved his arms. He watched Darkhand straighten on the horse's back and then angle toward him. About 15 minutes later, Darkhand was reined up in front of him.
Light and set, Pawnee. I got coffee and bacon and bread if you feel like partaking of my grub.
You would feed me?
Sure.
I accept. But watch closely my back trail. There are a few in that bunch of blood-hungry fools who have the ability to track well.
You left them?
Forever and ever. It is one thing to make war against men, but not women and babies. I took no part in that.
Yeah, I didn't see your moccasin tracks nowheres about there. I knew that Windchaser had befriended you a time or two. Go on, eat. We'll talk when you're done.
When the Pawnee had finished, Preacher poured them both some more coffee.
It is one thing to hate when there is reason for it. But my hatred for you had become unreasonable. My brother attacked you. You did not attack him. I attacked you twice. You did not attack me. My hatred was stupid.
Darkhand abruptly stuck out his hand, and Preacher smiled and shook it.
From this day forward, we do not make war against the other. Is that agreeable with you?
Sure is.
Good. Now I will tell you something. I was scouting the other day, 2 days ago, and came up on two Cheyenne. They were young men, and I have seen enough blood. I made peace, and they did the same. We ate and smoked and talked. They had spoken with some Kiowa a few days before, who had spoken with some Delaware, who had just left the trading post on the river. A very large group of white men were there. They had just come in from the east, far to the east. The Delaware told the Kiowa, and the Kiowa told the Cheyenne, and the Cheyenne told me that the men were buying huge amounts of supplies, and they were all well armed. They also were a loud talking bunch, and smelled bad. They did not bathe, and the odor from their bodies was awful. I believe these men will join Andy Price, who should be at the fort by this time buying supplies for Bones and his people and the arrogant men with them. Preacher, my heart is very sad about the little sick boy who was killed. I saw where you buried him with his pony. That was a good thing you did. He will need his pony to cross to the other side of life. But his grave will not fool the Utes when they return to find out what happened to Windchaser. And they will return, Preacher. After the hunt, listen. I have what I think is a fine idea. Why don't you ride to the strong Ute camp and tell them what happened? They will see to the fates of those who did that terrible thing.
No, I can't have Utes killing every white man who comes along. We're not all bad. Well, if Bones has more men coming out to join him, I reckon I best get on with whittling down the odds.
I would say that you have made a fine start towards that.
Darkhand stood up.
I go now, White Wolf. You will not see me again while this stupid war is going on. Months from now, should we meet again, remember that you will always be welcome in my camp.
And you in mine, Darkhand.
Preacher stood up and extended his hand. Darkhand shook the hand and walked to his horse.
How about that, Thunder? First pony I ever really made friends with. Damned if he didn't turn out to be a real nice fella.
Bones glared down at the tracks Van Eaton was studying.
Tracks lead off yonder. I bet you that engine went straight to Preacher.
I'm glad to be shut of him. I never did trust that bastard.
The team of men were packed up. The royalty had been separated at Bones' orders. He wanted to keep as many alive as possible. He wanted that money, and the gentry were no good to him dead.
Let's go. We'll meet an hour before sunset.
One team headed out straight for the new camp to get it ready. The other team moved out, concentrating solely on tracking and finding Preacher. Spanish and his team, including a French aristocrat named Robert Tassin, rode not long at all before Spanish's eyes gleamed with excitement.
Got him! He is not as smart as he thinks he is. Look here!
The team members gathered round. The tracks were as plain as could be. They didn't know that Preacher had been a laying down sign all morning, trying to get them to see the tracks. For this sign, Preacher had jumped up and down in one place, broke off a branch, and built a small fire. He figured if this didn't work, he'd have to find him a white rag and stand out in the open and wave it at the men. Robert Tassin grinned.
We've got him! Let's press on, men!
Tassin spurred his horse and entered the timber.
Hold it, Tassin! No, you don't! Preacher is mine!
The Spanish forced his horse ahead of Tassin's and up on the trail. Spanish went down, leaving the saddle like a sack of potatoes as the big, heavy-caliber ball blew a hole in his chest and shattered his heart.
Merde!
Tassin jumped from the saddle and took cover behind a tree. He looked all around him, but he could see nothing. He looked over at Spanish. The man lay motionless on the ground, his shirt front bloody. Tassin lifted his rifle, looking at where he'd seen a faint puff of smoke. The only thing that saved Tassin's life was the turning of his head as one of the team, a large, big-bellied, rather obnoxious fella called Percy, stepped on a branch. The ball blew bits of bark into the side of Tassin's face, stinging and bringing blood. Tassin bellied down on the ground, presenting as small a target as possible. This was just not turning out well at all.
You boys made a bad mistake. You best say your prayers now.
Hell with you, Preacher! We got you now!
Then come get me.
Preacher changed position, moving several yards to his left. Balls whizzed harmlessly to the position where Preacher had been.
Oh! Oh, you got me, boys! Oh, Jesus! Oh, it hurt something terrible! Damn your eyes! You killed me! Oh, tell my poor old ma goodbye for me, boys!
Woo-hoo! I got him!
Get down, you fool!
Percy fell dead to the ground.
Let's get out of here! Work your way back! We are targets here!
Another of Bones' men made a jump for his horse. The man's face separated from his head and his terrified mouth leapt away. Bones and Van Eaton rode up and slid from their horses, taking cover. The rest of their group, including Willie Steinwinder and Prince Rudy Coleman, caught up to them as the manhunters realized Preacher had moved on. They came out from their protected spots. Bones took one look at the sign that Spanish had found and glowered with disgust. He looked at what was left of his team of men.
He suckered you all.
Whatever in the world do you mean by that remark?
Tassin, holding a bloody handkerchief to his face, glared his embarrassment and fear at Bones.
I demand an answer.
Tricked you, that's what I mean. Preacher deliberately left this sign, hoping you'd be dumb enough to follow it. And Spanish was dumb enough. Stupid idiot.
Let us proceed with the hunt. After him, men!
Just hold on. Hold on, Steinwinder. That's what Preacher wants you to do. He's laying up in the brush or behind some rocks just over that hill yonder. Just settle down.
Van Eaton's right. We gotta sit down in a safe place and plan this out carefully.
Cal and Paul from Bones' team turned back from where they'd studied the dead and the phony sign.
I'm for that. I've helped hunt down a lot of men, but I ain't never seen no human being like this here Preacher person. He's more like a wild animal that somehow got as smart as us. Preacher said last night that some of us would die this day. He was sure right.
Bones sensed the moment was getting spooky to some of the men. Down on the flats, he could see the rest of his party riding toward the ridges. He already had too many of the royalty gathered here.
Cal, you take Paul and head off those other men. Preacher would love to catch us all bunched up near the timber.
Cal and Paul did not need a second invitation to leave this scene of blood and death. Bones took off his hat and scratched his lice-ridden head.
We gotta start acting like an army and thinking like generals.
I am a general.
I thought you was a prince, Coleman.
I am. I'm a general too.
As am I. And so is Zapata.
Well, why don't you start generaling then?
We thought you would never ask. Catching this Preacher shall be easy. We will show you how.
Is that a fact?
May we? Just watch and learn.
Preacher watched the manhunters through his spyglass. They were all packed up and riding away. He watched the riders until they were no more than tiny dark dots in the distance. He collapsed his glass and tucked it away, then squatted down and gave this some thought.
Them old boys want me to think they're pulling out when I know damn well and good they ain't doing no such of a thing. They think I'll ride into their little ambush. They are dead wrong.
Preacher figured they would take the same route that they took coming in, so he planned to make a wide circle and see if he could get a few miles ahead. He'd be right there to greet them.
This ain't gonna work. We ain't seen hide nor hair, Preacher.
Bones and party, now led by the royalty, were on their third day of travel. The thought was creeping into the minds of many of the manhunters that Preacher had not taken the bait and was not going to fall into the trap. By late afternoon of the third day, the manhunters had traveled about 60 miles from their last contact with Preacher. They hadn't seen one living human being. Manhunters were in a long, narrow flat, running north and south between the snow-covered peaks of the Rockies. Cal waited until the main body was in sight, then began waving his hat. Rudy Coleman, riding the point, spotted the signal and angled the column off toward the creek. Rudy couldn't understand why one minute he could see Cal, and the next instant he could not. He didn't know the terrain ahead of him, didn't know it was very deceptive, ravines and gullies and wallows on the east side of the creek. And Cal? Well, Cal was in no condition to be aware of anything. Preacher had thrown him a fist-sized rock at the man, the stone slamming into the back of Cal's head and knocking him from the saddle. Cal lay on the ground, unconscious. Preacher had taken up the man's weapons, his powder horn and his shot, and vanished into the bog across the creek. A knowledgeable man can traverse a bog, but he better know where to put each step. There was mud there that could take a man down to his waist or beyond. The bog ran for about 1,500 yards one way. It was about a half a mile across. Injuns avoided the place, knowing it could be a death trap for both man and horse. Venomous snakes lay above the shallow water on clumps of grass, sunning themselves. Rudy rode up to the creek and sat his horse for a moment, looking down at Cal, thinking the man certainly chose a strange time and place to take a nap. Rudy was slammed from the saddle, the ball tearing through his shoulder and almost blinded him with white-hot pain. He hit the ground on his belly, knocking the wind from it. Bones and Van Eaton and a few of the others immediately left the saddle and belly down in the knee-high grass. A few of the less experienced, including all the royalty, raced their horses toward the wounded Rudy. One of Bones' men did a backflip out of the saddle, dead before he hit the earth. Wilhelm Zonbelker threw caution to the wind and galloped his horse through the creek. But the horse had more sense than the baron. He refused to enter the bog, stopping quite abruptly. Zonbelker went flying out of the saddle and landed in the mud at the edge of the bog. He sank about 6 inches. Zonbelker thought he was in quicksand and immediately panicked, kicking his feet and waving his arms and flinging mud in all directions. Sir Elmore Gerald Taylor drew a short saber from a saddle scabbard.
Charge, men!
Charge?
I think that's what he said.
This was the day for horse sense. Elmore's horse refused to step into the bog, too, putting on the brakes and sliding to a halt. He landed right next to the baron, and the point of his saber jabs Zonbelker in the ass.
I lost my saber.
Good. I hope you never find the damn thing.
Preacher let himself sink into the mud until only the top of his head and his nose remained above the surface. He was behind a clump of grass and couldn't be seen. His one rather fervent wish was that there was not a big rattler sunning on the clump. The sun would be cycling soon, shadowing the valley in darkness. Preacher would mud swim out of the bog under cover at night. He rather hoped that some of the men would step into the bog, but he knew that was not very likely. The rest of the manhunters waited stock still until shadows began casting long pockets of darkness before they moved. And even then, they did so very cautiously. None of them had been able to spot Preacher. They didn't know whether he was still out there in the bog.
Sir Elmore, Zonbelker, creep out of that swamp or whatever it is careful-like. Stay low leading your horses back here. We gotta get gone. Van, have the boys start dragging the wounded out.
Right. What about Cal?
Leave him.
Preacher remained in the bog for an hour after they'd left. then, in full dark, he carefully worked his way out of the bog and back to his camp about 3 miles away. He washed himself at a tiny runoff and brushed the now dried mud off his buckskins. He cooked his supper and boiled his coffee over a tiny fire. He ate to keep on living, but he didn't taste his food. He laid out his blankets, and with rifle and pistols fully charged and close to hand, Preacher tried to rest, but he couldn't. He thought about the scalps he'd seen hanging on the bastard's saddles and guns, and anger burned deep in his heart. Windchaser's people and Eddie had deserved far better. He lay for a long time, staring up at the brilliant, starry sky. The longer he thought about it, the more scalps he could identify. Windchaser's had a streak of gray right down the center of his hair. Preacher had seen that one tied to the mane of Van Eaton's horse. Windchaser's woman's hair had a sort of auburn tint to it, since she was the daughter of a mountain man. Bones had been displaying that one. And their kids had taken after their mother, lighter hair than the others in the tribe. Preacher had seen their scalps too. This high up, the stars seemed so close he could almost reach out and touch them. The preacher was in no mood to appreciate the beauty of the night. He had something else on his mind. Killing. Preacher picked up their trail about mid-morning, and for a moment, it confused him. The trail led south and east. He studied the tracks. There was still the very faint outline of older tracks, and he recognized those as being the men who had left for supplies and returning from Bent's Fort, horses and mules. Then he realized what Bones was doing. His bunch was pretty well shot up and hurting, so he was trying to link up with his other party, hoping they was bringing reinforcements. Preacher figured that when they joined up, they'd hold up for a time and then come after him with a vengeance.
Suits me just fine. The more the merrier, Bones. Bones. Somebody sure named you right, because your bones is gonna bleach white as snow in these mountains, child killer.
Preacher didn't follow Bones and the others. He turned around and headed back north, figuring he'd restock as well. He wanted time to kill a couple of deer, make some pemmican, smoke and jerk some meat, and eat some venison steaks. The weary and bloodied bunch linked up with Andy Price and the gang of men he was bringing back from Bent's Fort. Bones eyeballed the bunch and figured about half of them would turn back once they took a good look at the Rockies. 15 or 20 more would pull out after the first sneak attack by a Preacher. Those that stayed would be lean and mean and hard and tough.
There's another bunch coming up behind me. I told them to head on back. This ain't no game, but they're still coming. They're city toughs. Some of them come all the way from New York and Philly and Boston and them places. I don't understand how they made it this far. They don't appear to know north from south. And you never in your born days seen so many different kinds of guns. One of them's got 2 pistols. Each has a cylinder that holds 6 rounds and revolves. He calls them revolvers. Strange looking things.
They're what now?
Revolvers.
How do they work?
Damned if I know, and I don't think they'll ever catch on.
Did you hear anything about the hunt back at the fort?
Oh yeah, that's about all the folks talk about. And that's strange too.
How so?
Well, there was a goodly number of mountain men there, but none of them seemed to be a bit concerned about Preacher. Nearabouts all of them said the joke was going to be on us.
Well, how about Jim Slattery and them reporters who left us?
They never showed up, boss. Nobody there has seen hide nor hair of them.
Injuns got them.
That mob coming up behind us just might be what we need. Preacher will be so busy trying to figure out what to do, mayhap some of us can slip off during the confusion and kill him.
Sir Elmore walked up, and Andy wondered at the lethal glitter in both Bones' and Van Eaton's eyes at Elmore's approach. I mean, the rich guy was paying him, wasn't he?
Hey, now that is an excellent thought. By Jove, I believe you've quite probably stumbled upon the solution to our problem. A very admirable bit of ruminative prowess, my good man.
Sir Elmore patted Bones on the shoulder and smiled, and he walked off to share the good news with his fellow adventurers, happily unawares of how close to death he had just been.
I was hoping them fellas would learn to talk right whilst I was gone.
No such goddamn luck.
Mm-hmm.
Preacher spent his time relocating his cache of supplies, jerking a goodly amount of meat, resting and eating and getting ready for war. While Bones was waiting for the wounds of his men to heal, Preacher was preparing himself mentally to dispose of the entire worthless, no-count, disagreeable lot of them. Summer came to the mountains in full bloom. Valleys were pockets of color in all hues. Utes had returned from a very successful hunt, were puzzled by the disappearance of Windchaser and a small band. Warriors from Windchaser's village searched frantically for their families, and failed to search the little valley where Eddie and Windchaser and his band had met their deaths. The wilderness was vast, and it was impossible to look everywhere. The warriors from Windchaser's village mistakenly headed north and west in their search, and the little valley, now covered with summer's blossoms, remained untouched for the time being. Had they run into Darkhand, he could and would have told them what had happened. Darkhand had traveled north and east to rejoin his own people, who were camped over in the unorganized territory that lay just south of the Missouri River. Sir Elmore had found a saber, wisely kept in sheath and out of sight, because Varen Zonfelker had threatened to break it if Elmore ever drew it again. Most of Bones' men were healed up enough to ride. Those that weren't properly healed could either suffer the discomfort and ride or stay and be left behind. All chose to ride. Bones sat in the saddle and studied the new group of men Andy'd warned him about. He was not impressed. The second band of manhunters was just about the most disreputable-looking bunch of ne'er-do-wells that Bones had ever seen. And when the likes of Bones Gibson thought somebody was trash, they couldn't get much lower if they crawled under a snake's belly. Bones wisely decided to distance himself from this mangy-looking pack of so-called manhunters.
You there!
Bones reined up and turned in the saddle to stare at the burly lout who was striding toward him.
What do you want?
Where's this here murderer called Preacher?
You want him? You find him.
I'm Lige Watson.
So?
I'm the toughest man in all of Pennsylvania.
Then you best head on back to Pennsylvania, Watson, because out here, you're nothing.
We'll see about that.
Not for very long, we won't. Yeah!
Bones left Lige Watson blinking stupidly after him. Preacher lay on his stomach on a rise and peered through his spyglass. He took a second look just to make certain his eyes weren't deceiving him, but they weren't. There were two camps now, about 40 men each, a mile apart.
Holy jumping elephants, I sure am getting to be a right popular fella. We're gonna be falling all over one another before this is through. I think I'm going to have me some fun come tonight.
Lige Watson, the self-appointed leader of the second bunch, returned from visiting Bones' camp and walked around the campfires inspecting his own men. They was about as sloppy a ragtag bunch of losers as had ever gathered anywhere. The group was made up of those types of people who are constantly out for an easy dollar, who expect the world to give them a handout, who always blame others for their problems, who could never keep a job because the boss picked on them. Among that second group were strong-armed boys, thieves, hustlers, murderers, rapists, and every other kind of no good anybody would care to name. Lige strolled back to his fire and sat next to his friend, Fred LaSalle.
Looking real good, Fred. I'd put these boys up against just about any group twice our size.
Bet you we kill that preacher before Bones does.
Bet we do.
Preacher crept closer to the encampment, wishing he was somewhere else, or at least upwind. The stench of unwashed bodies could be smelled for hundreds of yards. No self-respecting Injun would get within an arrow's range of this group. It was enough to gag a buzzard. Preacher lay on his belly in the tall grass less than 20 yards from Lige's camp and stared in disbelief. The fools had two fires blazing that were big enough to roast a whole goddamn buffalo each. He figured the big, ugly, bully-looking man someone had called Lige was probably the leader of this skunk pack. He looked like a man who had a real high opinion of himself, the way he strutted around. Preacher took an immediate dislike to him. He'd seen men like Lige before, men who'd come to the mountains and tried to fit in with other trappers. They hadn't lasted long. Mountain men were hard to impress.
Well, boys,
Tomorrow we start hunting down this preacher person. I don't figure on it taking no more than a week. Probably less than that.
Preacher smiled and moved closer until he reached a pocket of darkness. Then he stood up and brazenly strolled into the camp. Many of the men were dressed in buckskin, so no one paid any attention to Preacher as he walked through the camp and straight up to Lige.
Howdy. I got a message from Bones if you be Lige.
I'm Lige. What's on your mind?
Well, Mr. Lige, now don't get mad at me. I'm just delivering the message. Bones said for all your men to bring your cups and come on over. There's whiskey aplenty and food for all. Says both our bunches had best get to know one another. But he said for me to tell you to keep your butt out of his camp. Says if you show up, he'll stomp your gizzard out.
He said what?
Oh, well now, he said a lot, Bones did, but I ain't gonna repeat most of it. It was right insulting and personal.
You tell me, mister!
Well now, don't you get mad at me.
I'm not gonna get mad at you. You just tell me what Bones said.
Well, he said that you smelled worser than a skunk. Probably had about as much sense as a jackass. Oh, and he called your mama some real terrible names, he did. And I ain't gonna repeat them slurs against a good woman. I just won't do it. God may strike me dead. If you don't mind, I'd like to leave that bunch of name callers over yonder and join up with you, Mr. Lige. I think Bones is setting up an ambush for your boys. Anyway, that's what it looks like to me. And besides that, I just can't abide a man who'll call another man he don't even know a low-down, no-good, buzzard, puke-breath, dirty son of a bitch like Bone said you was.
Lige's eyes bugged out and his face turned red. His ears wriggled and his Adam's apple bobbed up and down.
You can join us. Let's ride, boys! We got a nest of snakes to clean out!
Within seconds, the camp was deserted. Preacher wandered through the camp, picking up what supplies he felt he might need. Carrying huge sacks filled with powder horns, food, weapons, candles, matches, and what have you, Preacher walked away toward the high up country. He would have taken several blankets, but they all had fleas hopping around on them.
Gonna be real interesting over at Bones Camp in about 5 minutes. Real interesting.
Andy Price squinted out into the night at the sound of approach.
Rider's coming, Bones. Looks like that new bunch.
Now, what you reckon that pack of ninnies wants?
I don't know. They sure is in a hurry.
Lige and his group rode right up to the camp. Lige jumped off his horse and walked straight up to Bones and kicked cook pots and bedrolls out of his way. Most of his men followed his example.
What the hell do you think you're doing, you half-wit?
I got your message, you big mouth, no count. And this is my reply!
Bones hit the ground.
Why, you son of a...
Blood and snot flew everywhere. Lige's boots flew out from under him and he landed on his butt. Then Lige's men jumped at Bones' men and, brother, the fight was on. It was one hell of a fight. Fists flew, so did teeth. But all good things must end. Eventually, the battery wound down. The men in the camp were exhausted. Almost to the man, they fell down to the ground and just lay there, chest even. Finally, Bones, laying flat on his back in the grass, managed to glare at Lige.
What in the hell brought on all this, you idiot?
Don't you be calling me no idiot, you lowlife. And you know what brung it on.
I don't neither.
Do too.
Don't.
Does.
I does not.
You think about it. You know.
I don't know. Why the hell do you think I'm asking?
Well, you sent a fella over to our camp to see me, and he said you said a lot of bad things about
me. I never sent no fella over to see you, and I ain't said no bad things about you. I thought a bunch of bad things, but I never said them out loud.
Lige ruminated on that for another moment. Then he raised his bloody head and looked around. He spied Fred, not 3 feet away, holding a cloth to his bloody lip.
Say, Fred, where is that feller anyways?
Back yonder at our camp, I reckon.
A tiny spark of suspicion entered Bones' head. He raised up on one elbow. The eye that wasn't blackening and closing because of a right cross from Lige's fist narrowed.
What did this here feller look like, Lige?
Well, he was dressed in buckskins. Sort of tall, and you could tell he was pretty muscular. He was clean-shaven, except for his mustache.
You idiot! That there was Preacher!
Preacher? You mean the man we're hunting comes strutting and sashaying bold as brass right up into the big fat middle of our camp and told them lies?
Yeah. Now you might get some idea of the type of man we're hunting.
Nervy old boy, ain't he?
Well, shit, yeah. You could say that.
Feeling mighty foolish, Lige and his men made their way back to camp, where Lige found a note written on a scrap of paper and stuck on a tree limb. He read the missive.
What do it say, Lige?
It says, "Get out of these mountains. I won't warn you again. This here is your only warning, Preacher."
A huge hulking monster of a man whose hands extended past his knees, giving him a distinct ape-like appearance, grinned at Lige, making the man shudder a little. Lucas was not right in the head.
I don't like this fellow, Preacher. I'm going to tear his arms out when I find him and beat him to death with him.
Way to go, Lucas. That'll be fun to watch.
Lucas grinned at Willie, who was a small man, barely 4 feet tall.
You and me, Willie, we'll catch this Preacher and be rich.
All right, boys, I got things to say. Listen up! The first light, we start hunting this murdering no count. And we're gonna be working side by side with them old boys over yonder in the other camp.
Hey, my powder horn's gone!
So's the bacon I left out to slice.
Why? Preacher stole all the stuff! He took enough powder to blow up half these mountains!
The next day, Preacher studied the camp through his spyglass. It was just about like he'd figured. Bones and the nobles were gone hunting him and had left no guards behind. Only the cooks and servants were there, and Preacher wanted them gone. So far, they had taken no part in the manhunt, and Preacher held no animosity toward them. Preacher crept down to the camp and suddenly rose up out of the grass about a yard away from a servant carrying a load of tin plates he'd just washed.
Howdy!
The man clutched at his chest, his mouth open and his eyes wide with fear. The others stood still and stared at Preacher. None of them made any move toward the rifles that had been placed around the camp in case of hostiles attacking.
Oh, relax, folks. I ain't here to do none of you no harm. Y'all dish me up a plate of that good-smelling grub and a cup of coffee and we'll talk.
Preacher sat down on the ground while a cook quickly served up a heaping plate of food.
Well, thank you kindly. So you boys reckon you could find your way out of these mountains?
Certainly. I served in the British Army before gaining employment with the Duke. My experience with rugged terrain is vast.
Is that a fact? Well, was I you boys, I'd busy myself packing up and then I'd get the hell gone from here. Y'all ain't took no part in hunting me, and I'm obliged to you for that. Your bosses is miles north of here looking for me in all the wrong places as usual. But boys, when they do catch up with me, it's gonna get right nasty. So why don't y'all start packing?
What about the savages?
Well, they ain't gonna bother you none. They got themselves a big powwow down on the Arkansas. The four main tribes is gonna make peace with each other. Besides, there's enough of you, and you're well armed. It'd take a powerful big bunch of Injuns to attack you. When you get down to Bent's Fort, you ask around and hook up with supply wagons heading back east and tag along with them for extra safety.
Several of the men turned and began packing. The others soon followed suit.
The horses do not belong to us. There'll be warrants issued for our arrest.
There ain't nobody gonna be alive to issue no warrants, boys. There ain't none of that bunch gonna leave these mountains. Or damn few of them anyway. So y'all take whatever you feel like taking. Now, y'all seem like right nice fellers, so I'm going to give you some advice. Now, maybe you didn't know what you was getting yourselves in for, and I'm going to think that. Because if you give me reason to think otherwise, I'm not going to look kindly upon you.
We were told it was a hunting expedition. We had no reason to think it was anything else. we did not learn the truth until we were far from civilization.
Well, now's your chance to get out of this mess. Pack it up and get on out. When the men had left, Preacher began gathering up all the blankets, tents, food, clothing, and medical supplies left. He piled everything up and set fire to the whole mess. Then he went to the other camp and did the same thing. Afterwards, he began running toward the valley floor to the slopes. When Bones and the gentry spotted the smoke, they'd come galloping. Preacher smiled as he ran across the meadow. There was going to be some mighty irritated folks when they saw what he'd done. Mighty irritated.
God damn son of a bitch, hellfire shit!
The hunters returned to see their camp nearly burned out. They managed to save quite a number of articles from the fires, but their tents were gone, as were many of the blankets and spare clothing. To heap insult upon injury, Preacher had left another note. It read, "I warned you." A dozen men from Lige's bunch exchanged glances and, without saying a word, mounted up and rode out. They wanted no more Preacher. At the other camp, Bones and Van Eaton and the royalty watched the men leave without comment. They were glad to be rid of them. Unbeknownst to Lige's people, at the orders of the royalty, their men had buried a great deal of supplies carefully wrapped in oilcloth and canvas. Bones glanced sidewise at Sir Elmore.
Well, that was good thinking.
Yes, naturally.
A small group of settlers and missionaries had left Bent's Fort, heading for the Rockies to establish a settlement and a church. Problem was, they were being guided by a man who was so inept he'd have trouble finding the altar in a church. Patience Comstock smiled at her twin sister, Prudence, as they bounced along in the wagon.
I am thrilled beyond words. This is such a grand adventure. We'll be doing the work of the Lord by bringing God to the savages.
Yes. And won't Father and Mother be surprised to learn about that preacher man they told us about back at the fort? Just think, sister. A man of the cloth so well known and so devout, so strong in his faith and loved by all that even the savages called him preacher.
Yes, sister. But I wonder why the Methodist Board of Missions didn't tell us about this man. Well, he must be of another faith, dear. Of course, I'm sure that's it. No matter, we're all doing God's work.
Patience tacked a few strands of auburn hair back under her bonnet.
I'm sure he's a fine gentleman.
The Rocky Mountains soared before him like the Rock of Ages. The Easterners stared in amazement.
Oh, sister! Aren't they magnificent?
Breathtaking, sister.
One of the settlers, a good, solid, sturdy young man, a German stock named Otto Steiner, walked up to the twins' wagon.
Quite a sight, ya ladies.
Oh, Mr. Steiner, they're just beautiful.
Well, I just want to see those lovely, rich valleys and lakes and those mountains. Where a man and his wife can raise kids and vegetables and have cows and fish and hunt. We go on now.
Otto waved at the scout, who was now sober, having exhausted his supply of whiskey. The man sat hunched in his saddle and looked at Otto.
Right. We go, Mr. Wells? You take us through the mountains?
I ain't guaranteeing nothing.
What do you mean, sir? We were told back in Missouri that you knew this country.
Well, they lied. I ain't never been this far before, and to tell you the truth, I ain't real thrilled about going no further neither. So I don't think I will.
What does that mean?
Means to quit. Right here, right now. See ya.
Wells didn't look back. In shock, the pilgrims just stared after their former scout. The wagons and people with their livestock suddenly looked awfully tiny with the majestic mountains looming in front of them. Otto's wife, Hannah, and Frank and Jane Collins left their wagons to join Otto and the twins.
Well, now, this sort of leaves us in a pickle, doesn't it?
The Lord will see us through.
I didn't like that Wells person anyway. He was a very untidy man who did not bathe enough. And he cussed. I cannot abide a man who swears.
Well, we must press on. The Lord is with us, and surely he will hear our prayers this evening and send his man of faith in the wilderness, Preacher, to guide us through. I am certain of that. Onward, people! Forward, mules!
The fare in the camp of Bones' men had decidedly gone downhill with their cooks leaving and much of their supplies destroyed. It was now mostly venison and beans. Not one sign of Preacher had been found by the daily patrols. It had been 2 weeks since the cooks and servants left and Preacher had burned their camp. The nobles thought that Preacher had fled. Bones and Van Eaton didn't care. It really made no difference to either man. The longer they stayed out, the more money they made. The rules and rates of this game had changed. Each of the men were being paid $5 a day, a very princely sum. However, as leaders, Bones and Van Eaton were receiving substantially more. In addition, when or if Preacher was found and the aristocracy killed him, each man in the group would receive a cash bonus. The entire group could have the reward money posted on Preacher's head. Literally. The reward money could only be claimed by bringing Preacher's head back as proof. A carefully packed glass jug and pickling solution had been brought by the second group. Up near the timberline, Preacher was getting bored. His hopes that the hunting party would go away and leave him alone had been dashed. It was midsummer now. Preacher figured he was just going to have to find a way to end this nonsense. The camp of the manhunters had shifted, the unwashed multitudes crawling out of their blankets, shaking out the fleas and various other bugs, and heading to the fires for coffee. Bones squatted by the fire, warming his hands and waiting for the water to boil. He was always surly in the mornings, and this morning he was surlier than usual. Even Van Eaton didn't dare to speak to him. The gentry were gathered together, as usual. They preferred their own company to that of the unwashed. Bone reached for the coffee pot. A rifle ball banged against the big iron kettle, ricocheted, and struck the man to Bones' left in the center of the forehead.
Shit! Hit the dirt!
One of Bones' original group, Joey York, was a tad slow in taking cover. The body fell into a cook fire, setting his clothing and greasy hair ablaze.
God damn! Somebody pulled Joey out of the fire. That smell is awful.
One man jumped up and made it halfway to the smoldering body of Joey. Preacher shot him in the neck. Andy Price stuck his head up and peered over the log he was hiding behind.
He's got to be in that little stand of trees over yonder, but that's a good 300 yards off. Man, he can shoot.
Andy lost part of his ear. Fell back behind the log, blood pouring down his neck.
Oh, God! He's killed me!
Ah, calm down. You'll live. But you're gonna be wearing your hat funny from now on.
Jesus! Joey's stinking something fierce. Can't nobody haul him out of there?
You want him out, you haul him out. I ain't moving.
Charge, men! Into the fray!
Charge your goddamn own self.
By God, I will! Where's my saber?
Baron Zahnbelker quickly scurried away from Elmore.
Stay down! Don't be a fool! Preacher's got us told.
He's moving, heading off for the south. If he makes the creek, he's gone for sure.
Here it is!
Sir Elmore jumped up, waving his saber. Baron Zahnbelker was keeping a good eye on the Englishman.
Now's our chance! Charge, men!
Sir Elmore ran toward the creek, waving his saber, with Sullivan and Steinwinder right behind him.
Oh, horseshit! Come on, boys. We can't let nothing happen to them people.
En masse, the men who were left behind came to their feet, all running, waving rifles and pistols. Preacher's bullet hit Sir Elmore's polished saber. The Englishman fell like a railroad spike being hit with a sledgehammer. Bones dodged as one of his men took a bullet to the gut and crashed face first into the dirt. Bones looked up just in time to see Preacher, barely 250 yards away, leap up and take off running, zigging and zagging through the grass and brush, heading for the ridges. Preacher put several miles behind him and the scared, shook up, and bloody band of manhunters. He wasn't worried about them following him, not anytime soon anyway. He threaded his way through the timber and topped a ridge. Preacher looked down into one of the prettiest canyon valleys in this part of the country. He stared hard at the scene before him. Then he blinked, but the scene remained unchanged. Three wagons, a half dozen cows, and riding horses.
Hmm.
Preacher rode down the grade and across the meadow. Preacher had not had a bath in several days, and it had been a couple of weeks since he'd shaved. His buckskin was stained, and his hat had damn sure seen better days. He knew he looked rougher than a cob and meaner than a bear, but at the moment he didn't much care. He rode right up to the wagons and got himself a jolt. Two of the finest-looking women he'd put eyes on in a while stood side by side. Twins, with no difference he could spot in them at all.
Howdy, folks. Y'all ain't got no drinking whiskey with you, do you? I feel the need for a little Who Hit John.
Sir, I'll have you know we are on a mission for God. We do not sanction with the partaking of strong drink.
Well, do tell. Well, I'll be damned.
And we do not hold with swearing, either.
Preacher smiled amiably at the matronly-looking blonde who stood with her hands on her hips. She was a trifle ample across the beam for Preacher's liking, but still, she was a handsome woman.
You don't say.
Sir, are you a mountain man?
I reckon. I've been to these mountains ever since I was knee-high to a frog. What are you folks doing down here all by your lonesome?
A German-looking man, built like a retaining wall, stepped forward.
Our guide told us he didn't want to go on, and has left us here. We are traveling to bring the word of God to the wilderness, and find places to raise God-fearing families.
Preacher rubbed his grizzled chin for a moment before he swung down from the saddle.
I was just kidding y'all about that whiskey. I got me a couple of jugs stashed up in the brush that I swiped from some guys.
You stole some whiskey?
Yeah.
Why?
So's I could drink it.
There are other people close by?
Oh, yeah. I guess near about 50 or so, about 5 miles yonder way.
50?
Uh-huh.
What are they doing?
Doing their best to kill me.
Kill you? Why?
Because I've been killing as many of them as I could, that's why.
You have been killing them?
Oh, yeah. I reckon up to the moment I've killed, well, oh, 15 or 20, I reckon. But it's all right, because they started it.
You have personally killed 15 or 20 men in your life?
Oh, no, ma'am. That's just in the last few weeks. I lost count on how many men I've killed over the years.
What? What is your name?
Preacher.
How many other men out here are called Preacher?
Just me.
Oh.
Patience fainted. Otto caught the woman before she hit the ground and gently placed her in the shade of a wagon.
What's the matter with her?
You brute!
What'd I do?
Really? Nothing, sir. We all were under the impression that you're a man of God. That's why Patience fainted.
A man of God? I've been called a lot of things over the years, but damned if I've ever been called that.
Sir, I must insist that you refrain from swearing.
Before a preacher could tell Hannah what she could do with her insistence, Patience's eyes fluttered open and she sat up.
I had the most terrible dream. I dreamt that we were confronted by a horrible man who drank whiskey and ran around killing people. Oh, my word, he's still here. It wasn't a nightmare.
Now, I have been called that a time or two. Y'all splash some water on that female's face and get her up. I gotta talk to you. This just ain't no place for pilgrims to be at any time, but most especially right now. Y'all make some coffee and put on some grub. I'm going over yonder to that creek and take me a wash and a shave, then I'll be back.
Preacher led his horses away to the creek some yards away.
Make some coffee and food, Hannah. I think that, if I understand correctly his way of speaking, we are in trouble. I want to hear what he has to say.
15 minutes later, Preacher reappeared. His buckskins were still stained, but he had taken a short bath and shaved the heavy growth of beard from his face. To their surprise, the women all found him handsome. To their dismay, the men all found him even more dangerous. Preacher poured a cup of coffee and squatted down.
Now listen up, pilgrims. I gotta tell you what's going on. Those men following me all over creation are some unholy mix of bounty hunters and noblemen from Europe. Some months back, I saved a boy, Eddie his name was, from being worked to death. The waste of skin that was beating him, well, I won't lie, ended up shooting him, but not until he shot at me first. Well, that's it. They put a bounty on me and they've been chasing me ever since.
What happened to the boy?
Preacher's jaw tightened.
He was dying. His lungs was ruined. So I left him with some Indian friends of mine to care for him. They made him happy, but while I was away, them hunters killed the Indians. mainly women and kids, as the braids was off after the buffalo. They dragged Eddie to death and scalped him, and they killed his pony. Then they left both of them out to rot and be eaten by buzzards.
Oh, sweet merciful Lord!
I wonder why we heard nothing about the bounty on you.
Probably because y'all don't frequent taverns and saloons and the like, nor do you associate with them that does. That mountain man back at the fort who told you I was a preacher of the gospel, you remember any names?
Well, there was this huge fellow called Horsehide Jack.
Yes, and there was another gentleman with the unlikely name of Pistol Pete, and one great bear of a man they called Papa Grizz.
Them old boys was having a high old time putting you folks on with what they was doing. Don't feel too hard toward them. They didn't mean no harm. They's just funning. Humor gets sort of dark out here in the wilderness. Because a lot of the time, there ain't a whole heck of a lot to laugh about.
I fear that because of my insistence that we press on, I have placed us all in great danger.
Maybe. But if y'all will play along with the lie I'm dreaming up right now, things might not be as bad as they could be. Especially if you stay in this here canyon.
Whatever in the world do you mean, sir?
Preacher winked in patience. Come dawn, Van Eaton glanced off into the wilderness and stopped, staring in disbelief.
Holy shit! Look!
The group of men looked. There was Preacher on horseback not 100 feet from camp, with a white handkerchief tied to the barrel of his rifle.
By the Lord! That's our quarry.
He wants to talk, Sir Elmore. He's coming under a white flag. We'll honor it.
You can't be serious, sir.
I am serious. A white flag is a white flag. We'll honor it.
Bones fished around and found a filthy handkerchief that, well, it used to be white. He waved it over his head. Preacher rode slowly toward the camp, stopping about 10 yards back.
You boys got another problem facing you. Not nearabouts as dangerous as me, but a problem nonetheless.
And what might that be, sir?
The Methodist Church sent out a flock of missionaries to bring the gospel to the heathens. They're holed up over yonder in a valley. I run into them some time back and I told them what was going on here between us. The scouts that brung them in has gone back with a message to the church board and the president of the United States. And they took all your names back on paper to give to important folks back east. Anything happens to them missionaries, and you all have federal warrants out on you. The war between us is still on, but them Bible-shouting folks had best be left alone.
Sir, no harms have come to those missionaries. I'm a Christian myself and believe strongly in the Lord.
Preacher had no immediate comment on that, but his thoughts were grim.
Fine. Bones, how about your boys?
They'll stay clear.
Them missionaries over my objections has volunteered to set up a makeshift hospital and take care of the wounded. That all right with you?
Fine by me.
Well, that's wonderful and very gracious of them. But you destroyed all our medical supplies. That wasn't very sporting of you.
Well, shame on me. My goodness. You just can't depend on nobody nowadays to be a good sport, can you?
Well, quite true, quite true.
Uh-huh. Look, next time we see each other, you best start shooting, because this is the last time I aim to be cordial with you.
Oh, we'll do that, Preacher.
Preacher nodded sharply. He kneed his horse and the hunters watched as their quarry wheeled and galloped away. Back in the missionaries' camp, the women cooked up a fine meal. Preacher was laying back against his saddle, drinking coffee.
Do you trust these bounty hunters to keep their word, Preacher?
About as far as I can pick up a grizzly bear and throw it, Otto.
You said one of the nobility was called Zornbircha. Is that correct?
Yeah, he's a baron, whatever the heck that means.
It is a fine old family. But starting about a century back, they began marrying very closely. I'm afraid insanity is running in their blood now.
I don't doubt that a bit, but you don't have to worry about that no more.
Oh? Why?
Because I'm fixing to stop his clock, that's why.
You're going to fight 70-odd men all by yourself?
It was close to 100 or better when I started, and there'll be about 10 less this time tomorrow.
You say those deadly words so casually. Doesn't human life mean anything to you?
Them folks hunting me ain't human, Missy. Trust me on that.
Dear Lord, protect us.
Oh, don't worry, Missy. Them coyotes won't hurt you. The Indians call them song dogs. They're sacred to some tribes. Coyote won't hurt you, neither will a wolf if you leave the poor beasts alone.
Song dogs?
Sure. Just listen to him. He's making pretty music. Just listen and enjoy it.
You ever been married, Preacher?
The Injun way, yeah. I got kids. Y'all probably frown on that, but that's the way it's done out here. And don't think Injuns take marriage lightly, because they don't. Their way's just different from ours, that's all. I don't agree with a lot of what they do, but then again, I do agree with a lot of what they believe and practice. When this little trouble of mine is all cleared up, I'll sit you down and try to convince you you need to head back east. Because, the Injuns, they don't want your religion and they don't need it.
Whatever in the world do you mean by that? They're poor, unsaved heathens.
They ain't no such of a damn thing, Missy. They worship the same God you do, in a way, that is. Their gods have many names, but they all amount to the same thing. Man above, Wakantanka, Grandfather Spirit, Great Mystery Power, the Wise One above.
Preacher picked up a handful of dirt and let it slowly dribble to the ground.
This here is Grandmother Earth. The Earth is alive. The Injun respects the land and all the critters on it. Now, when an Injun dies, his soul, Tasum in Cheyenne, travels up the Hanging Road. That's the Milky Way to us. The Injun believes that after death, everything is good. There's no reason to fear death. And that only those who take their own lives won't never rest in a peaceful village in the land beyond. Now, as far as I'm concerned, that pretty much goes along with what's in the good book.
But they must be baptized in the blood to be saved.
Oh, I don't believe that, Missy. And I don't believe a person's got to congregate, neither. I think if a body accepts that there's a higher power over us all and tries to live right, that person ain't gonna be denied entrance to the land beyond. You think there ain't gonna be no horses and dogs and cats and coyotes and wolves in the land beyond? Well, if that's the case, I don't want to go.
You do not mean that, sir. That is blasphemy.
I just figure it's the truth. Be a mighty sorry damn place without critters to make friends with. Y'all sleep sound. I'll be around, but I'll be pulling out before dawn. Y'all might not see me for a few days.
Preacher got to his feet, tipped his hat to the ladies, and walked off, quickly lost in the darkness.
A man is either a simpleton and a fool or a highly complex person.
He's no fool.
He certainly is a very confident man.
I don't believe I have ever met a man quite like him. He is delightful.
Preacher was gone when the pilgrims awakened the next morning. While they slept soundly, Preacher had built up the fire, made coffee for them, and left them a rather ominous note. It said, "You folks best take to sleeping light, or you'll wake up dead."
Oh, dear. I hope nothing has happened to Mr. Preacher.
Hannah looked at Patience and smiled. Prudence looked at her twin and frowned. Otto glanced at Hannah and winked.
Now you stop that.
About 3 miles away, Bones squatted down in the brush and looked at the dead man. He was one of Elijah's group who had gone into the woods to take care of his morning's business and instead got him a bullet in the head. Bones was extra cautious today as he crouched behind a tree, presenting no target at all.
Is the wretch dead?
Yeah!
Shrek!
Bones inched his way back toward his men. He knew damn well that Preacher, as soon as he fired, had changed position. He was out there somewhere, waiting as silently and as menacingly as a big puma, watching through those cold, hard eyes. It wasn't a real comfortable feeling for Bones.
Everyone turn around facing out in a circle. Preacher will have no choice but to stand and fight and die, or leave. Now move out.
But Preacher had already left the area. He had slipped in a ravine a few hundred yards from the enemy camp and snaked over the lip a few hundred yards later. He had him a hunch that sooner or later Bones would wise up and do something smart for a change. It was about time for him to start using his noggin.
Preacher, I know you ain't gonna answer me, but just listen. Me and two others want out. We're through. We quit.
You yeller skunks.
Call us what you will, Lodge. We're quitting this here hunt.
Preacher, we're riding out. We're done. Don't shoot, for God's sake.
The men took a chance that Preacher wouldn't shoot and quickly packed up, saddled up, rode out. Nothing happened to him.
See that? He got away. Preacher's getting tired. I told you we'd wear him down after a time.
I do believe you're right, old boy. Come, let's press on.
Not using his spyglass for fear the sun would reflect off the lenses, Preacher squatted up near the tree line and watched.
That's right, boys. Just like the spider, I'm waiting. So come on.
Preacher moved over to his already picked out and ready position and waited. Those below spread out, coming up on foot in a single stretched out line about 1,000 feet wide. Preacher stretched and made himself comfortable and settled down for a time. He knew it would take the men below him half an hour or so to get where he wanted.